Cast to Tiltcast, episode 229, Dead Sexy to Corgis.
Dead Sexy.
And this week we talk about The Witcher 3, The Wild Hunt, Destiny,
Circus Dogs,
and Elite Dangerous, which Justin and Rusty are cracking out to. Also, we discuss the finer points of Tales. Stay tuned.
Fuck Skullus
indeed.
Motherfucking shotgun.
It's a motherfucking shotgun.
Yeah!
It's a motherfucking shotgun.
Hey guys, it's the Tiltcast.
Wow, and Justin's like lethargic, can't think of nothing to say.
He started off and then I deleted him. He was like, fine, if you're going to delete me, I'm just not going to speak. Say something.
Something?
All right then. He's actually inside the room, guys.
All right.
So... Fucking A.
Yeah, another. Yeah. It has been another 2 weeks.
It has been another 2 weeks. It's a long fucking 2 weeks.
It is. And Sunday, July 19th.
Yay, Sunday.
This will be released at some point after this in the somewhat near future.
Sometime, maybe. I send this shit up to be fucking uploaded pretty quick, so.
Well, release dates.
Yeah, release dates, yada, yada, yada. Wow!
So, holy, this is the Tiltcast, and I'm Nos.
I'm Rusty. Jason.
I'm Rusty.
And together, we're explorers.
Bounty hunters? Traders, maybe.
Yeah. Smugglers?
Smugglers, for sure.
Pirates?
Only if you're smuggling slaves, man. Only if you're smuggling slaves.
Pros.
We have to go there.
Yeah, well, pros. We are fucking legends. That's what we are. Fucking legends.
I guess we're all kind of on a high because we've been beating our heads against the wall for about a week and a half, which some people that are probably a little bit more elite than we are will probably laugh, but we've been beating our heads against the wall with Skullus over in Destiny, and I promise that we won't spend the whole show talking about Destiny, but because we're kind of done with Destiny for a minute.
Right.
But 6 different 4-hour attempts of trying to get this fucker and get the timing down and not die at the last 25%.
Yes.
And it's usually a pretty quick burn all the way up to the very last spot, and then we get to fucking Skullus, and Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
We beat our heads against the wall in that last 25%, wipe, and start that 40-minute process over again. And goddamn, there's been a lot of very depressing nights.
It was really depressing.
That is the one thing in Destiny that is very much not fun.
Yeah.
It's not fun in the way that Nexoramus and WoW was not fun when it was launched several years ago. Not the one that was Wrath, but OG Nexoramus that was a pain in the ass that was
It was
shit.
Definitely set up to be difficult. Now, Skullus has been a thorn in my side. You see, since they announced the second year of Destiny and the Taken King and everything like that, they put out these Moments of Triumph. Moments of Triumph includes killing Skullus at least once so that you can say that you've done it for the first year. It's the only thing I needed. So, I'm sitting there as these guys are fucking dying out at about 2 o'clock in the morning, because, I mean, they work, so I'm still up. I've got half an energy drink left, and I'm sitting there as they log off in the fucking, like, antechamber just before Skullus, and I'm going, this is really depressing. This sucks.
And because of the mechanics, there's no fucking way I can just, like...
Well, no, you could invite randoms if you wanted to. I'd be like, I'm at the Skullus checkpoint, but I didn't want to do that to you guys. So I didn't want to go and say, hey, I got 2 absolute random people in the fucking group, and hey, we killed them in like 15 minutes. So,
well, we now know that probably it's fairly difficult to kill them in 15 minutes unless everybody is sporting a Gjallarhorn. Now, the thing is I got a Gjallarhorn last week.
Fuck you!
In the Nightfall.
And then the very next Nightfall, Jason gets a Gjallarhorn.
Fuck you!
Rusty is still
Gjallarhornless.
I am fucking salty. I am
still
so fucking salty about that.
He's still searching for the Horn of Gala.
So, when Jason's Gjallarhorn dropped, I literally took my headset off. I thought I hit the mute button on my fucking controller. I threw my controller, and for probably 4 minutes straight, I said, fuck this game. over and over and over and over again.
He did.
Because my playtime in Destiny equals to greater than the combined time for both of these fucks. And they've gotten the fucking Gjallarhorn. This game hates me. In the last 2 weeks, this game hates me. And then, after I calmed down, I said, I've got every single raid weapon I want to get from a raid. And these two guys don't have a Fatebringer. So, I'm alright for now. But Destiny can go fuck itself hard at this point. At least for a couple weeks. But we got the Elder Cipher. I'm looking forward to getting the Ward of Wolves.
So,
yeah. I gotta say, it took me a minute to actually dawn on myself that it had fucking awarded me the Gjallarhorn.
Every fucking time I see that thing pop up, I look at it, I'm like, I see the icon, I know what that looks like. I look over and I'm like, that can't be right. And I do a double take and make sure that I'm looking at the right line to see whether or not it's my name. And it wasn't my name for 2 weeks straight. Fuck you, Destiny.
You know what would have even been better is if I was like sporting a green heavy or something like that.
Oh, no. No. What would have been worse is if you had gotten a duplicate. And I would have probably jumped through the fucking internet and put my boat so far up your ass, you'd be flossing with my fucking shoelaces.
The reason
the anger is real right now. So
the reason it took me a second, you can ask these fuckers. The only exotics I've gotten have been
the fucking
bought from Xur or from exotic bounties.
Right. So
I see an exotic icon pop up. I'm like, oh, that's not going to be me. It's going to be Justin and Rusty.
I've got just about every
exotic. I've gotten like 4 Mita multi-tools. It's just. Well, I mean, just keep sharding them.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a decent gun, but it's not so decent. Weird.
I don't know. It's a great gun. Except that it's an exotic in my primary.
Damn. The thing is I have quite a few hours. I don't know exactly how many hours right now. I'm not in front of my Xbox. But I have quite a few hours into this game. Probably more than I should. Because, I mean, Destiny can be experienced in, what, 20 hours? if you're extra lucky.
Yeah, if you really wanted to, you can go through the whole story in a very long day.
Right, you know, so yeah. You can experience most of Destiny one day. I have like 700 or 800 hours into this game. And most of that time isn't just sitting there dancing at fucking, you know, at the tower. It's me raiding or doing something.
To explain the game, I mean, really, it is just a loot grind.
It is. It is a loot grind, but it's kind of one of the draws I had. It's a first-person Diablo to me. It's not necessarily nearly as bad as Diablo as far as the randomness is concerned, but it scratches an itch of a game that could be a whole lot better, but the bones are all right. You know, the base systems in the game are okay. They could just expand it to be absolutely fucking
great. Oh, dude, you want to know how many hours? Just pull up your Smart Glass app. Easy.
I would, except for I forgot my Microsoft account password. So.
Again?
How often do I fucking log into this thing? I don't use Smart Glass very often, guys. That's just the way it is.
I do just because it's easier to do the messaging while you're in the middle of playing.
You're right. I mean, if I was doing raids or anything like that, or setting up my own raids, I'm like, invite me, because I don't want to put in capital X, small X, fucking Boner Boy 69, fucking small X, capital X. Right. I can't be fucked to do that, so...
Boner boy.
But yeah, so we did that. That actually felt pretty fucking amazing, considering how much we beat our heads against that wall.
And the reason why we're fucking starting off with it today is because it's so fresh in our minds. We just got done with it. We fucking was like, okay, we've got like this one little thing we need to do, and then we're coming over and recording. And that's it. It was super fresh in our minds, and the fucking frustration was just...
And to be honest,
release of frustration.
I think that's a whole lot of the reason we were so clutch, because we got in some fucking tight-ass fucking situations.
Yeah, well, if both of you had died, and I'm sitting there fucking dancing on your ghosts, so...
So the very last...
The very last, I'm like, pop your bubble, we're killing this motherfucker.
Well, and you had both died, what, the rotation right before that?
Right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's a rough time. I mean,
and it's not necessarily the...
It's worthy of
the
endgame.
Boss.
It's worthy of endgame.
It's worthy of endgame, because the mechanics make it as such that...
It 326 hours.
The mechanics enhance the effects of ads. Enhances the danger of them.
Well, the fact that they're one level above you and they do a fuckload of damage is... Some fool, some asshole, some random person in the ether told me that, oh, the level 35 is not much harder than the level 34. Well, I can tell you, we did both the 35 and the 34. We started with the 35 and then finished with the 34 today. There is a massive difference between the two.
Yeah, because we played the 34 in, what, like 25 minutes?
Yeah, it wasn't
very
long at all.
Yeah, the level 34 felt like playing a strike.
And level 28 is even worse, dude. You can snore through it. If you die, you're terabad.
Right.
So, it's super easy. But...
But, terabad. One last bit of Destiny stuff, though.
God, we've been on it for 11 hours.
Did you want to go back over everything with your favorite streamer that happened the week before?
Oh, Jesus. What are we talking about here? Oh, God. There's been so much, dude.
Broman and diets.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I watch Destiny streams a lot because... It's entertaining at work when there's nothing more to entertain myself than Google, and you know it's fun to watch a game that I'd like to play, but I can't because I'm working. And so I watch Professor Broman almost exclusively now because, well, he's funny. And recently I was like, okay, I had a day off. I was, you know, I'm watching him while I'm playing Destiny. I subscribed to him again. I had sent him a message about the diet that I was on, that I lost 20 pounds, and he
basically with his Zurios T-shirt as a target goal.
Right, and I'm using Broman's shirt as a target shirt. And, you know, for half an hour or so, he's talking about how fucking, you know, different diets and how awesome it is that, you know, somebody's using that as a target. And, you know, I got the word out for most of those people who were just sitting there, like, watching him play Destiny about, you know, the ketogenic diet and, you know, having... steak and bacon as a staple and still lose weight. So I modified Justin's diet because Justin's diet is basically Atkins special.
I guess it's just Atkins adapted to me.
Right. So it's a special form of Atkins. I started out with paleo and then transitioned into ketogenic diet. And that is 60% fat, 35% protein, and 5% carbs. And the carbs you get come from fresh veggies. So, I have lost 21 pounds as of my weigh-in last Thursday.
And that's been, what, a month?
And that was in a month. So, 1 month, 21 pounds. That's fucking fantastic. I feel a whole lot better. And I'm really strict about it. So, that... is a major portion of, like, me being energetic right now. It was one night where I got on fucking Xbox Live and I was basically fucking, like, screaming.
Well, you're also human deprived.
Well, yeah. I was human deprived, that's for sure. Nobody was there the entire day. And I had had one of those fucking super energetic days for some reason. I didn't have anybody to talk to or anything like that. So
when Justin and I get home from work, we jump on Xbox Live, and he's like, "Ah, people!
It wasn't like that. It wasn't like that at all. I can tell you,
picking up a corgi from the pound, except less retarded.
Well, thank you. I think.
Well, you know, they have those unnaturally big heads.
Yes, they do. It's like three quarters of their body. It's weird.
I'm not a really big fan of corgis.
No.
I think they're weird.
Yeah, well.
Like circus dogs.
Every time I...
They are, though, weird.
Every time I find one, they want to hump my leg. Maybe I'm just dead sexy to corgis. I don't know. I got to turn my screensaver off.
Dead sexy to corgis, huh?
Yeah, dead sexy to corgis. Oh, God, so, that's getting written down, isn't it? Fuck you.
So these fucks successfully pulled me away from Witcher for 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, well, I apologize on that front. I mean, I know that Witcher is kind of, well, addicting. Once you start getting into the story, you just kind of don't want to put the book down. And I apologize wholeheartedly for that because... I know how I was when I was playing Witcher, and I know how he was when he was playing Witcher, and it was basically our lives, work, Witcher, sleep. Shower was optional.
Not for you on this diet.
Fuck you. Yeah, if you do decide to go on the ketogenic diet, I'm going to give you two warnings. One, your BO changes badly. And two, for the first month... Get used to diarrhea. It's just going to happen. It's just going to happen. After a bit, I sat there on the John peeing from my butt, and I'm sitting there going, this is why Justin doesn't like to talk about poo. He's gone through this. I understand now. I am sorry, Justin. I did not mean to, like, offend you in some way to have you...
It goes away after a while.
It does.
Well, it actually made me, and I gotta say, I apologize, Justin, because the last couple of weeks watching Rusty go through this, I now realize that all that shit I gave you about having to take a poo while we were recording,
pun intended,
when you were back in the apartment,
well, when I had
was
to go.
Totally unfounded.
No,
I feel like a little bit of a dick now.
Yeah. Yeah. It just feels like a hot sun approaching the sphincter, and you just can't stop it.
Especially when you eat a lot of, like, chili. Not regular chili, but just, like, I put chili pods on a lot of stuff.
I use Cholula on my eggs. I understand, dude. It's like fire coming out the butt, so...
Man, what are you talking about? Butts again?
What the fuck are we doing?
You brought up butts.
Oh, well, I mean, butts. I was just giving you a warning. Those are the two things that I would just get.
Oh.
Really good deodorant and some butt cream.
I was going to say the smell goes away after a while, too.
I don't think it does. It got worse today. Or it might have been that I just took a really bad shower or something. I don't know. Because when I was shaving my head and I had my arm up like this, oh my God, I almost fucking died. I was like, oh, damn, I need to take a shower now.
So Tiltcast's PSA of the week. Buy good deodorant and get ready to piss out your ass.
I was going to say, put a cork in it.
Put a cork in it? I like put a cork in it, but not pissing out the ass. There's something wrong about that. Somewhere with that. Fucking. All right, so.
So, other than that, I did get a little bit further in Witcher.
Yeah,
I eked out a couple hours for Witcher.
Yeah, you did. So you're in Skellige now?
I'm in Skellige.
So...
She's in Skyrim 2.0.
Skyrim 2.0 for sure.
Yep.
Skyrim Witcher Edition.
right.
So, Skellige is pretty cool. It's...
No, I'm level 21, so I don't die quite as easily now.
Right.
It's nice.
Are you doing a lot of the side quests?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I mean, because... When I got to Skellige, right. I didn't actually do the main mission, like the go to the forest part of the mission. until, like, I had gone around the map at least once. And you have to sail. I mean, you gotta sail in Skellige.
No getting around that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
But it's actually a neat mechanic. I enjoyed it. It wasn't gimmicky. It was a good way to get from point A to point
from
B.
From point A, yeah.
Now, in Skellige, you remember...
when you don't have fast travel.
When you get into a ship, your fast travel points change, and you can actually go to harbors. Yeah. So...
Yeah. Well, you can do that the rest of the continent, too.
Right, but it's more prevalent in Skellige because there's more ports.
Obviously. So, you know... Got a little bit further in that. I mean, I'm way over leveled for the main story missions right now as it is.
So was I. So. But, I mean, you don't really want to...
I don't really care about being over leveled for those because I'm kind of like, I'm just doing those for the story anyway.
Exactly. You're sitting there going, okay, I don't want a challenge from the story. I just want to experience
it. So what if I can kill the monsters in one or two blows?
There's not a whole lot of monsters per se in this, you know, the story missions anyway. It's just go do this, talk to these people, and like read the book for at least half an hour.
Right.
Which is a really good book. You should try it if you haven't.
So, won't say a whole lot more because we still don't want to spoil anything. Not yet. This is not spoiler cast.
We're gonna end up doing a spoiler cast as soon as he's done.
Okay.
And we'll give you guys that are listening a bit of a notice that we're going to do a spoiler cast for it.
It'll probably just be titled Witcher Spoiler Cast.
Yeah, so so that you don't have, if you haven't completed the game and you don't want to be totally spoiled by the story, then you can tune out for that one. But...
You know what feels weird?
What?
Getting distracted by games right off the bat.
I know, right?
No, it's just because we're so angry about a specific game, so...
That's right. Well, I mean, so, like...
My life sucks because Destiny has sucked my soul out for a week and a half.
I was going to say, the other night I was hanging out with Holly and Casey and Shannon. Shannon's been on the show before once. Shannon gets drunk really quick.
Yeah.
She's cheap drunk. Probably good for Casey.
Yeah.
And she had, I don't even know what it was. It was just something liquored up. And halfway through her second, she started telling some really amazing stories.
It only takes two?
Usually, yeah.
Holy.
She balls. Usually like within an hour, but I mean, she's got to be like 95 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah.
So basically, and you want to do two, you go, here's two shots. And a tape recorder.
Pretty much. Well, she got off on some tangent. I don't know where she heard it. And I'm pretty sure this is just complete random drunk Shannon-ness. But I fully plan on recapping this once she's sober.
It's going on the air.
It's going on the air. And we were talking about just random shit. And of course, you know, me and Trent are talking movies and stuff like that. And it's really late at night, on a work night of all things. She starts talking about North Tulsa gangs. And... she mentions that she heard that there was a North Tulsa gang that did drive-bys on horseback.
Oh, West style. That's just, Yankees, I will kick your ass.
And I looked at Trent looked at me.
Clop, 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 clop.
And I looked at Casey, and I was trying to give him a look like, is it okay if I just fuck with her? And, of course, he kind of gave me that knowing look like, she won't give a shit because she won't remember.
So what kind of ponies were they riding?
I didn't go there. I was like, so where's, like, their home base? Like, do they have...
Right, where's their stable at?
Yeah, where's the stable at? Things like that. She's like, well, there's actually this place called Rape Alley.
Right? Rape Alley?
Right?
Well.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
So again, I looked at Casey and I was like, can I continue?
The only way I gotta go home, it's like 20-minute walk this way, or I can walk down Rape Alley. I don't know if it's safe or not. It's not a street name. It's a given name by the North Tulsa horseback fucking gang.
Well, and she told me, she said, well, the reason they became gangsters is they didn't make enough money at Ray Ballet.
Give me all your money, bend over.
No, I don't...
Were they not charging enough for butt sex? Or, like,
I don't like... All
right. Like, I had this sudden flashback. Like, you've seen Idiocracy, right? Yeah. Oh, you saw, like, God, the transformation of Fuddruckers?
Yes.
And I just imagine this neon sign that just said, butt fuckers. And it's like Tuesday night special, $5.
Oh, God. Well, to keep this in context, we're not glorifying rape in any way. It's just the fact that... How the fuck does that even come into somebody's brain?
No, we don't glorify rape by anyways, but in the context, it was really funny.
Maybe North Tulsa gangs and Rape Alley, what's next? What's next? You got something?
Well, they didn't make enough money from rape, so they decided to get on horseback, and I was like, what kind of guns do they have? They're like, you know, six-shooters.
Six-shooters?
I was like, so what? They hold their gun sideways and go, pow, pow.
Yeah. Hold on, I gotta reload.
Justin, being raised by a gun guy, knows that you hold a six shooter sideways, you're gonna break your nose.
Well, yeah. that ends. It's not very accurate at all if you do it that way. But that's beside the point.
It really wasn't a point at all.
Give me all your money.
Clippity clop, clippity clop, clippity clop. It's gonna be a ride by. You hear the horses?
Hey, Billy Bob, I think this one's going down Rape Alley. Go get it, Billy Bob.
There was 911. What's your emergency? Clock, I think there was clock, just clock, a ride by.
A ride by.
A ride by.
Is this an what a do you low mean? Rider?
Well, I couldn't catch the license plate, but I saw a horse's ass.
Is this in a low rider? No, is it a Palomino? You mean the car? No, the horse. The fuck? Let me send the Mounties out.
This is just the very premise, and there was a lot of other things that were said that were probably a little bit
off color.
More off color.
Lewd. Rude.
Wait.
More off color than this, but.
Wait, are...
Off color for this room?
Wait.
Off limits.
Are off limits. There's a difference between off limits.
There's a difference between off limits and off color. Because okay. I start to say, our group of friends and drunk, off color is taking it lightly.
Fuck, I get off color on a sober day at work.
I know, right?
Well, you're a little bit too personal with people we know, so I'm not going to bring it up.
All right. That's fair. It's fair. But, I mean... Dude, the stories I could tell if that was fucking, if that was off the table, man. There's so many stories I could fucking tell about people being drunk.
Now, she is a funny drunk, and so it is a joy and a pleasure. Oh. She tells, if Casey says, oh yeah, Shannon's talking about coming out tonight too. I was like, all right, bring some alcohol.
Make it happen. Right? We're ready.
Bring something she'll drink.
Not a lot, Schwilt.
It's okay. You'll take most of it home with you.
Spent about $10.
Interesting thing, too, is since the last time we recorded, I learned I actually work with her mom.
Oh.
Well, then. That's cool.
Okay. She's like, clap. Yeah, Casey's a good guy.
That's clap.
Like, yeah, I'm going to tease the shit out of him now. I'm going to go up to him and be like, hey, Casey.
Hey.
What do you not want me to tell her mom?
Your mom's hot. And the look on his face is like, no. Don't go there.
Or do.
Okay, then. All right.
Well, I might have told this story. So, like, several weeks back, I was at our friend's bachelor party, and a mutual friend of ours' mother was there, who was very easily 20 years older than me, and would not leave me alone. And a part of me wanted to just piss my friend off, and the other part of me was like, there are places I won't go.
Yeah. Granted, she was hanging off of anybody in that gay bar who would let her hang off of them.
But then she fell out of straight, so
Well then, there goes that idea.
Yeah, Justin and I were the only bears there.
We weren't bears.
Who weren't gay.
Well, you realize that that's kind of synonymous, right?
Well,
that depends. I mean, my wife...
Were you wearing your assless chaps?
No.
Yeah, you probably should have. You probably would have gotten a little play.
I bet if you wore some ears.
Or ears, maybe a tail.
So, other random things.
Right.
So, I don't know if I told you this yet, Jason. I think I only told you.
I don't know.
So, the other day, I do a lot of interviews at work.
Oh, okay, yes.
One to two a day.
Oh, God.
And I don't hire a lot of people. And it's not just because I'm an ass.
You're an ass.
It's because that everybody applies there. So,
yeah. Well,
I usually weed out, one in 10 or one in 20.
You mean you only hire 1 in 10 or 1 in 20?
Usually, yeah.
Okay.
So this year, I think I've hired like 10 or 15 people.
Well, I'm...
And only one of them's gone so far.
You got to understand the caliber. The fact is, it is the business that you're in really does scrape the bottom of the barrel for talent.
It used to until I got more in charge of it.
Right, but I mean... There's not a whole lot of real good candidates that come through your door.
I could go into that later.
But, yeah.
And I mean,
because that's actually something I'm more responsible for at this point.
Right.
And it doesn't matter how long it's been there. Still, a lot of people who apply there, it's their first time in that sort of place.
Or it's their 18th.
Yeah.
You know, and usually
between those two, they don't get hired if they're getting interviewed by me.
Right.
But right. That being said, so we do a lot of questions, and we do have a business casual dress code.
Right.
And the guy bombed the interview. Like, he was nervous. He was sweating. Like, I even told him, I was like, look, I'm not here to make you nervous, but I'm going to keep a poker face this whole interview. And I'll flat out tell people that just so they know what's going on. I was like, I can't tell you how good you did. I was like, that's really for HR reasons so that I can be... non-biased towards everybody. So, while I do this interview, I'm going to remain completely poker-faced and give you questions. You're going to answer those questions, and we'll write down everything you say. So,
and Justin's got a really good manager face, which is also his poker face, which is also why he doesn't fucking go play at the casino, because people are going to read him. But, that's okay. Go on.
So, but, that being said, we get to a point where I'm asking if he has any questions, and he says, what's dress code like? And he's more or less in dress code. He's in, like, a pair of, like, dark pants. He's in a old polo. The old polo has some stains on it. And I'm thinking, if this is your best, you're kind of losing it here.
Stained polo for an interview.
Yeah.
Good luck.
So, I mean, he kind of failed that, too. Of course. I was hoping maybe it was just his last pair or something. I felt a little pity because he answered so badly on the questions that I questioned whether he knew what the fuck he was talking about. And then also the guy had been working so much. The guy hadn't held down a job for more than like 3 or 4 months at a time over the last 5 years.
Well, I got the answers to your interview questions from the internet. It's not good enough for you.
So I didn't let him know. And I was like, so what's your questions? And he's like, yeah, what's the dress code here? And I kind of say, what I'm wearing. I'm wearing collared shirt and slacks and a pair of dress shoes. And if you don't have dress shoes and wear tennis shoes, it's not that big a deal.
Mm.
And he looks at me and he's like, so Jason, before I make this statement, what is the most left field thing you could think of asking or being asked in an interview about what's appropriate for dress code?
Come on, manager Jason.
Left field?
Left field. Like, the fuck out there. Think about... as far out as you could possibly think, what would you say this guy had asked whether or not was appropriate?
Knickers and a tube top.
Ooh, okay. Knickers and a tube top.
We're in the right yard range.
Well, kinda. So,
do you want to take another guess?
No, I'm good.
Oh, come on.
So, I think Rusty... Rusty might have some experience with this. There's your only hint.
Fuck you.
Rusty might have some experience.
Yeah. Keep going. One more try.
Wow.
Let me just say, it is something that I had worn.
before. It's something that I've worn before. Okay. There's your hint.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've got... That gives me two.
All right, we'll shoot it out.
Kilt with any kind of shirt. Or leathers.
Oh, fuck you. I haven't been able to fit into my leathers in years, damn it.
Leathers as in assless chaps?
No, leathers as in, like, never but mind.
No, shorts and a polo.
Shorts and a polo.
Did he go that basic?
No, he said, he asked me, he's like, hey, so
we're talking left field guy. What the fuck you think?
You were almost in the right. You were almost like on base.
Almost, yep, right there.
Almost.
Yeah, he asked me, he's like, so what's your policy on wearing tails?
The fucking face, dude. Did you keep it? Were you able to keep your poker face? Were you able to keep it? Were you? That's my.
Well, here's what I did, because I didn't want to. I bit my tongue as hard as I could, and then I started to bite the inside of my cheek.
And then he bled a little bit, and then he cried. He had one little tear.
And it hurt, and then I said, I don't think that's in the dress code. And he must have caught some of my reaction. I mean, it couldn't have been. It had to have been a little bit obvious that I was holding back.
It was a little obvious that you were holding double aces.
His saving throw was to say, oh, it was for actually my roommate was actually wondering that.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know how to respond, so I was like, well, okay.
Well.
Like, is there anything else I can help you with?
Is there any other questions you want to throw at me?
Is there, yeah, I'm just thinking, like, can you just ask me something normal? And then, of course, you know, I...
What's the normal hours?
I had to shake his hand and he left, and then immediately he sanitized my hands. But
come on. Look. As the crowned king of the furries, I will have to say that he's not part of the group. None of us wear stained polos. No, it's
just not just, wow.
You, isn't that just bizarre?
You did better than I would have.
I would
if it had been me. I would have laughed in his face.
Well, I couldn't.
I couldn't do that. But
I couldn't see. That's the thing. I would be like, and this interview is now over. I think you have a great day.
I could have said that. I really wanted to say, what the fuck did you just say?
But
I just
and then wow. I would spend the next half an hour laughing with the other management team going, you will not believe. And you probably did.
Well, and there are certain things I may not be able to disclose, but let's just say that I told one person who's in way upper management immediately after work, because he wanted to know why my face was so red.
Well, and then you have to kind of cover yourself.
And then I explained the interview and what had happened, and he's like, what the hell?
No,
and very, very shortly after, I was called into...
HR?
No.
Oh, damn.
No, me.
You can't really say.
I can't say shit. I'll say shit later.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't say shit. I understand, yeah. But
it was so mind-bending. Like,
I want to work in a place that has an interview that is casual enough for me to say, what color tail? Is it a blue one or a purple one? If it's either one of those, you're out. But if it's a blonde's tail, maybe.
Like, is it a raccoon tail?
Is it a yeah, like,
is it a beaver
what kind
tail?
Of tail are you talking about? Are you Davy Crockett?
Is it like,
what?
Are we talking about, like, an otter tail?
Platypus tail.
Platypus. Something flappy, something straight, something curled, something with some weight.
Does it wag by itself?
Does it wag?
Oh,
is it like a mood ring?
Now, see, all right. I mean, I've gone through some interesting interviews, and some of the favorite ones that I've been asked. Now, I haven't produced a whole lot of interviews. Like, I haven't done been on the hiring side of one, but I've done quite a few interviews. The most interesting ones that questions that I've been asked is Apple or Android, Horde or Alliance. Let's see.
For the Horde.
What's your favorite Pokemon? let's see here. Are you comfortable wearing a tank top?
Where was that at?
I can't say. I can't say because they probably listen. Yeah. No, but yeah, it's the reactions I get from from saying, you know, hey, Android, and I flop my phone down on the thing, and two of the three interviewers are like, yeah, he's in, and the other person sit down flipping through her Apple phone going, you're not impressing me right now.
Yeah, panel interviews are always the hardest too.
Well, I don't have a problem with panel interviews except for one problem. The only thing that bothers me about panel interviews is which person to focus on. And you have to kind of figure out.
Yeah, it's just like when you do a speech, you kind of just, you make different statements to different people as you go.
Right, well, you...
The person that does the asking, then, of course, you focus on them.
Right.
If it's one person that's doing all the asking, though,
mm-hmm.
then the other two people are kind of irrelevant to a certain degree.
Well,
but you don't want to stare the whole time while you're talking to that person or it becomes awkward.
Right, well...
Like I'm doing to you right now. Like
yeah, you're kind of making like me uncomfortable.
Well, you know, my eyes are still not dry, so I can continue to do this for a while.
I would never want to be interviewed by you, sir. Yeah. Fuck you.
I could make it really awkward.
You can.
In a totally HR-appropriate way, I could.
I'm not very comfortable right now.
With you, I'm dressing you with my eyes.
Please don't ever say that to me ever again. Just don't.
Did that make you comfortable or no?
I don't think that would be HR appropriate.
That wouldn't.
No. No. But the fact that you might have been and you didn't say that you were.
What if you smirk?
If I raise one eyebrow, it's a date. Oh, man.
It's like all the different variants of how you do your greetings. It could always be like, hi, my name is Justin, or hey.
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 Hey. My name is Rusty.
Are you ready for this interview?
Are you ready for
this interview? We're going to close the door.
We're closing the door.
You better impress me.
So now it's just you and me. So.
The really bad thing is.
Do you feel comfortable wearing a tank top? Hello, Jason.
Hey, you're back.
Hey.
Hey.
You can get a little less intimate now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were having a moment.
Oh. In the sex dungeon.
I swear I'm going to hang that sign up again.
Dude, you have to.
I do.
And so we have to fucking do something with these walls here. I mean, we're in...
Actually, we're in the darkest I think we need to take it a step further. I think we actually need two light boxes, one for each side of the door. The outside says sex dungeon.
And the
this side says on air.
I've already looked into how to build those things. It's Justin won't let me take a saw to his wall.
No.
So, we're going to have to figure that out. I want it to be Bluetooth enabled.
Really, all I need to do is just coil up a whip and hang it on the doorknob and just leave it at that.
I'm okay, guys. Hey. Wow.
I don't think it picks that up.
No, I don't think so either.
Whew. I was hoping to derail the show. Did I do all right job?
You did a pretty damn good job. Pretty damn.
Yeah, I felt
damn.
Like we needed it. Like, I get off. On.
Off on. Off on. On off. I get off on. On off.
I'm talking on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we talk so much about gaming on here. Like, I figure it's good to loosen up a little bit.
Oh, I look forward to this every single 2 weeks. I actually miss it on the days that we do the podcasts on YouTube because, I mean, it's a lot shorter and a little less focused or a little more focused.
It's way more focused.
So we're trying to showcase a game, which I mean is a good idea. We have to we have to get some of the games that are lesser known out there because. All of us are about that. Like, try out some new games because the big AAA titles may not be the things that you're looking at.
Well, it's just like I was talking last week. Like, I felt like there was a lot of things about So I'm a pretty decent Batman fan. When I say pretty decent, like, I really do like Batman in general. I really like Arkham Asylum a lot. I think it's a really amazing game.
Yeah, I like the first one.
I think Arkham City lost a little bit of focus. And I feel like Arkham Knight is...
Batmobile simulator?
No, I'm just bored with it. I don't even want to play it.
Oh, well, there might be a reason behind that.
No, though. I can tell you. So, here's why I don't want to play Arkham Knight.
Okay.
So, tell me. Focusing.
Oh, my God.
Here's why I don't want to play Arkham Knight. Arkham Knight is probably a fairly decent main story.
Mm-hmm.
Because the quest changes, or the story changes, and there's a lot of things to do that are involved with that. The side missions, if they want to call them side missions, might as well be activities from Saints Row.
Okay. Oh,
it's showcasing these villains as a thing to do, but the mission type is always the same. And I griped about this last week. I'm almost to the point where I feel like I should just run through it, finish it, and then trade it in and get something different.
You should. I mean, in a situation
I've played a... It's not an RPG, so I'm realizing that now. But don't, like, dress up these side things as being a thing with an actual story with some meat behind it. Maybe it does at the very end resolution of it, but they're always the same, just in a different location. So, like, I don't want to drive around in the Batmobile upside down and do loop-de-loops and things like that for the Riddler stuff. I don't want to find the Riddler trophies right now. I don't really want to chase down Penguin's thugs and then just basically track a van and then go into a warehouse and kick their ass with Nightwing. Like, it is cool, like, the first couple of times I did it, except that it's the exact same thing every single time. I'm destroying a weapons cache. I don't really want to play as Azrael and beat everybody up on top of a rooftop without dying, and that's a mission or a side quest, as they call it. I don't really give a shit about saving the firemen all over the city because it's the exact same thing every time with different enemy types.
Why the fuck are the firemen still in the city?
I don't know.
They evacuated everybody. What the fuck are people still in there?
And I don't... we got way off on this tangent last week about Batman on a Tuesday.
Yes, we did.
And I won't go too far into it, but it's just the city is just populated with thugs and it feels uninspired, boring, and very much just... Unless you're just really, really hoping for something or really just digging... Scratching this Batman itch, I feel like it's the weakest link by a large margin. And okay. It looks the best. Batmobile drives fine. It's cool. The tank mechanics on it are pretty cool. But it's just the fact that these side missions are so lifeless and so samey. Like, they are activities. They copied and pasted a mission type and changed up some basic parameters on every one.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, when I play as Azrael to kick ass... I am simply playing the combat simulator to not get hit with different enemy types on top of a fucking rooftop as Azrael. I'm not doing anything else, and I don't know where it ties into the story. I'm just frustrated with it.
And I'm sure it enhanced that by just having played Witcher. Because genuinely, some of those side quests are genuinely like stories, short stories inside of a novel.
Yeah.
The side quests in there are longer than the $10 DLC in Batman.
Yeah.
And have more content.
See...
So getting the little Harley Quinn pack or whatever the fuck it was, that was a mission that took me about 25 minutes.
Really?
Most of that stuff's just like that. And it's
25 minutes?
It wasn't that
long. There wasn't anything else to it?
It was just... You're on a mission to break into the Gotham City precinct to break out Poison Ivy. And it is... It's just... It's a big old cash cow. I'm really glad I didn't buy the season pass and all that shit.
Well,
I'm just it's so disappointing.
You guys know what what my feeling is on money grab DLCs and stuff like that. Something that's not got any content to it, but is just there because it's a name,
right?
You know, and I'm very I of all the games that I have picked up. I've only picked up DLC packs for a few of them, and some of those that I picked up, I actually regretted. So...
I can give you examples of good ones, and I can give you a lot of examples of bad ones. When it says an expansion in front of the name, then I feel like that's the best.
Okay.
So, like, Dragon Age Awakening, but how many years ago
That was a really good one, because it actually had story to it. But, I mean... It seems like the best DLCs come for RPGs. You know, so they actually add about anywhere between 1 to 2 hours, sometimes up to 5 to 6 hours, and that's worth $10 to me. I mean, you know, being able to add that to my, you know, already long game, and gives a different dimension to the game. Like,
well, I'm just thinking,
Dragon Age 2's, you know, DLCs were awesome.
I'm thinking about New Vegas when they released that and they had those side packs.
Same situation.
And each one of those was pretty decently long, like 10, 15 hours a piece. They were $10.
I mean, they were big, and the level design wasn't so great, but on those,
I like the one that was the Native Americans.
That was in the Arizona. Big canyon.
Yeah, I like the one in the canyon.
I didn't like it because the level design made it so that you could only get from, you know, in certain directions. You know,
that's fair. But also, there's that one where the sci-fi one. Well, like that's not like they're not all sci-fi, but the one that you wake up to the robot and he keeps talking about your 10 penis fingers or something like that.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember what that is. And he got some really badass weapons, but...
Fuck.
That one was really, really good. Old World Blues. Old World Blues. That was the name of it. That was a really good DLC pack.
Yeah, and they did a really good job on those. And there's quite a few.
They did do so hot on Skyrim. Was it Hearthfire?
Hearthfire was something that they wanted to add to the game but didn't have the budget to do so. So they added...
Dragonborn was all right.
Dragonborn was probably the most complete of them.
And the other one was just adding some basic content.
The other one was the vampire one, right?
And it had some cool stuff to it, but it just didn't feel as substantial and as story intense or as epic as Dragonborn did.
It was like maybe 3 or 4. It added a very small area to it, and it didn't have nearly the amount of content than Dragonborn did, though. The island that they put Dragonborn on was fairly large but sparsely populated.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a mixed bag for that, but I enjoyed it. There was, you know, the big things with DLCs is that you have to have content. It's got to be fun. It's got to tie into the existing story in some way. There's got to be some value to it. You have to be able to say, this is a cool thing, or this is going to change the way that this game is going to feel.
It's not
just map packs. It's not just weapon packs. It's not fucking, like, a side mission here.
It just feels lazy. It's like with Witcher, they're just dropping in free stuff every other week.
Right. No.
And it's all that stuff that you usually pay $1 or $2 for. It's like, here's an alternate look for this character that you can select. Here's an alternate look for this. Here's an alternate, you know. Yeah. Well, we added these 3 new missions to this area. Here's these new side quests that you can do here. And they're just peppering it in every week until they get to the expansion, which comes out in a few months. And the expansion's supposed to add another 20 hours.
Jesus. 20 more hours to that game. See, it's slated. It's because I completed it already, and I did, I would say, about 85% of this, you know, the available content.
Yeah, I did probably most of that, too.
It's backburnered for a replay for at least 6 months or more at this point, because I want to focus on other games before jumping in on a big game like that. But when I go through and play it again, it'll have all the expansions, all the new quests added to it.
And that'll make it feel new again.
It'll make it feel new again, and that's what I want from an RPG. I played through so many RPGs, and I want to be able to have it feel new again. And a lot of times, the reason why I set down RPGs for somewhere between 6 months to a year between playing them again is so that I can almost forget what's going to happen. So it's like reading a book again. You don't read the same book twice in a row. You know, you go to a different series for a bit and then go back to it.
Yeah, it's like I rotate the same like 5 book series over and over again.
I don't want to talk about your fucking Star Wars book collections, sir. Fucking, I have a whole fucking wall full of them. I don't think you're missing any, are you?
Nope. And that's still only like 3, maybe 4 months worth of reading.
For you, it is. I've, as a student, I tend to read only when it's required. So, my leisure time is put into games.
You know, the new Dresden Files book came out a couple months ago. I read in two days.
Fucker. You read it on your phone, right?
Actually read it on that, that $10 e-reader? Nook that my wife found.
Sweet. See? Yeah. And that is why you thrift shop.
It is. I can't believe my fucking eyes when she comes home. There's a Nook. Like, basic Nook.
It doesn't have the backlight or anything. It's just
the paper white Nook.
I mean, that's all you need.
Sitting on my recliner, and I'm like, please tell me you didn't go spend $100 on this, or $75, whatever it is. She's like, I spent $9 on it.
Yes.
It was in the thrift store.
Mm. Awesome.
And of course, my wife knows. Fortunately and unfortunately, my wife goes to the thrift store enough.
It is actually an unfortunate thing sometimes.
You know, luckily, that means she is not going to all the other stores and completely spending all of my money. Unfortunate to the fact that
she ends up picking up.
She knows everyone who works there, and they know her. And so whenever something comes in that is like a good working electronic or anything they think she might like, she gets a phone call, and they say, we're holding this for you.
And then she ends up
with another useless... And then she goes and buys it.
Another useless piece of electronics in the fucking house. It can get pretty bad sometimes. Yeah. I look at her, and she's like, you're going to be mad at me. And I'm like, why? What did you buy? And she's like, I bought this cheese plate. And I'm like, the fuck do you need a cheese plate for? You know?
Right.
It's not electronics, but hey, whatever.
Right. So, you know, they're just some small things.
I don't like the fucking sound this makes.
Aww.
I got myself an e-cig.
He's been converted.
I'm not totally fucking converted, but it's nice to be able to have a little bit of nicotine in the house that he won't let me smoke in. Neither of them will, fuckers. It's 118 goddamn million fucking degrees outside, and I have to go outside to smoke a cigarette. It sucks. But I've lived in fucking places where cigarettes were more common than the inside, and the walls were yellow, so I can understand.
I started to say, dude, all you gotta do is think back to your apartment and how hard we had to work to clean that.
Fuck that apartment. Fuck that apartment. Oh, my God. You would never... He's a smoker. Okay, he was a smoker when I fucking, you know, when, you know, he helped me fucking clean that place out. When you walked into the place, it smelled like old, stale fucking ashtrays. It was terrible. And I lived in that environment. It made me sick. So, moved on from, you know, from that to better things. Like,
no, like, the walls were like bacon yellow. Grease yellow.
Yeah, it was fucking nasty.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
It was bad. Granted, The you could tell a difference like between your room and the room in which your old roommate habitated and the living room. Because at least while you were smoking, as long as it wasn't too cold outside, you had something cracked and you had some ventilation going through it.
No, her room was completely closed off almost all the time. Door was closed almost all the time. She had a German flag up on the wall. She had tacked up a German flag on the wall because she was German. And that stayed there the entire time that we lived in that apartment. When she moved out and she took the flag off, there was a fucking flag square on the wall where the fucking tar
had not... The bad part is, she had chain-smoked enough that... When she took the flag down, yes, there was this square on the wall, but the square on the wall was only slightly less yellow than the rest of the wall.
Yeah.
It was still yellow behind this flag.
Jesus Christ. I've never had to wash walls in a place before, and I washed all the walls in that fucking place, and they still had to repaint. And they still had to, like, pull all the carpet out. I'm sure I got my deposit back, at least. I don't know how.
Me and Trent knew we weren't going to get our deposit back.
I got most of my
deposit back. His place smelled worse than yours and Trent's place. Old apartment did. For the smoke smell.
As I say, me and him chain smoked like crazy in that place.
Yeah.
And we'd had some cigarette burns in the carpet, and like when I moved here, I was like, nope, not happening here.
Right, see, when you get into a new place, you're like, it's never going to happen. So I didn't want to ever have to deal with that again, so that's good. Don't smoke in your place, guys. Smoke outside, or not smoke at all. Yeah, I mean, all three of us are fucking sitting here like, you need to get an e-cig, dude.
I have them. They just make me cough like I'm smoking weed. They really do.
No, the newer ones are actually a whole lot better than, you know, like the stick ego ones, whatever they're called.
Yeah, this one's got to see the...
It's only a $100 investment.
It is. But you see the temperature control, you can change it. That's what causes that burn in the back of your throat that makes you want to cough. So you turn it down, say, I've got mine set to 390, and it doesn't fucking burn. So
390 degrees.
390 degrees.
That's just what the coil's burning. Yeah.
I mean, compare that to the 1,000-plus degrees that a cigarette makes. So, I mean...
A cigarette is not 1,000 degrees.
All right, what's the average temperature of the tip of a cigarette? Hello, Google.
You want my guess? 300 degrees tops.
480.
Of a cigarette. What is the average temperature at the tip of a lit cigarette? Okay, so side of the lit portion is 400 degrees Celsius or 752 degrees Fahrenheit. Middle of the lit section during a draw, 700 degrees Celsius or 1,292 degrees Fahrenheit. Over 1,000 when you're drawing on the cigarette. Just saying, 400 is not nearly that much.
Doesn't feel that hot.
No, because it cools down before it gets through the filter. That's kind of the reason why the filter's there. Well,
same principle with these.
So anyways, getting on to more interesting things than vaping.
Fucking vaping!
Me and Rusty discovered a game.
Oh! Are we going to get into this now? Fuck yeah, why not?
How long are we into the show?
Fuck yeah, we're an hour in. We're good.
We think we can do this in 20 minutes or so?
No, I don't think so, dude.
Does that mean we need to take a break?
Okay, we're going to take a break. Then we're going to talk about this fucking amazing goddamn game we found.
We're going to talk about why we're cracking out to Elite Dangerous.
Yes.
We need to quit just, like, leading people on with bated breath. They could be like, it could be something I'm really interested in. Or, why would I be interested in that? We'll tell you why you should be interested in this, at least why we are.
Elite Dangerous.
So.
Oh, my God. All right,
said, we'll be back here and, well, instantly for you. Yeah. You're going to listen to a jingle.
Cue the jingle.
Welcome back to the Tiltcast, and we are going to talk about that game.
Yeah, jingle.
That game that looks absolutely beautiful, and I want to play so bad, but
here's the thing. So we told you and teased you a little bit about Elite Dangerous, and we and Rusty really didn't know what to think. And we gambled on it last week because it went on a sale for a certain percentage off. $40.
It was 33% off, which is the lowest it's gotten, even on the summer sale. Yeah. It was 33% off in the summer sale, and I was really eyeing it. Like, I was watching it. I didn't jump on the Kickstarter because it is a Kickstarter game, but I had been eyeing it because it fills one of the spaces in video games that is lacking terribly right now, and that is a good space sim.
Yeah, and it's really simmy.
It is very simmy.
It's not going to appeal to everybody, but
no.
Here's the thing, and here's why it scratches it. I've been watching Star Citizen to see what happens with that game, and I don't know what it's going to be, what the price model on that's going to be, or how it's going to work. But we also have No Man's Sky on the horizon as well.
Yes.
And then the next closest thing to that was I can tell you the two names of the other ones. Elite Dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And Elite Dangerous is essentially a game about piloting a spaceship. That's the easiest way of putting it.
Yeah.
There's so much more to it than just piloting a spaceship. There are different factions that you can appeal to. And I assume there's some kind of like quest that happen later, but this game is kind of a never-ending game.
Well, I know...
We are focused on, I think, the smaller aspects of it because we don't know what to do with it, but we're having a lot of fun with what we don't know what to do with. Like, we started playing, and Rusty's like, I want to explore the galaxy because there's 400 billion galaxies in this game.
400 billion stars. Star systems. Not just stars, but star systems. So this is 400 billion places that a player can go and explore new things. Now, granted, exploring doesn't take a whole lot, and we'll get into that a little bit. But the thing is, the biggest draw to that is that, A, it is a European game, so it's based on European servers. There's a little bit of lag on our side, but it's almost generally not noticeable. But the time zones and everything like that, most of the people that play the game are in Europe. So our peak times are different than their peak times, which allows for interesting things. So you can do trading, and that is basically taking your ship from star station to star station and buying and selling commodities on a market, and they will, it'll pay you, a decent amount. It's all in-game trading. It's not player-made trading, not like EVE.
Well, and I don't think we're explaining the game here.
No, all right.
So let's kind of set the foundation of what this is.
Okay.
You start off in the ship with 10,000 credits.
Yep.
10,000 credits doesn't get you dick.
And your ship sucks.
The idea, or at least we don't know what the end game is, or if there's an end game, but what it does is it throws you on servers. You can play open play or solo play, and at some point, private play with friends.
Right.
And at that point, it's just do whatever you want. It's got a really steep learning curve.
Very steep. Oh, my God.
But once you get it, it makes sense because there's a lot of things to control in a spaceship.
Yes.
We've got it down to working on a controller.
Yes.
Because there are different shift commands, like I hit down and I hit B, and then I engage my hyperdrive. I hit up and I hit Y. I select a target. I hit right and I hit Y, and I select the hostile target. It's so on and so forth. So my thoughts is I played a lot of Wing Commander when I was a kid.
Yes.
This flies way better than Wing Commander.
Yeah, it's...
To the point of, if you've ever seen Battlestar Galactica, that they'd have, the new one. They'd do these maneuvers where they'd take a ship, and you'd fly straight, and they'd hit their afterburners, and then something would be chasing them, and they'd flip it around and go full reverse at the same speed because they flipped it around, and of course, there's no drag in space.
Right.
So they flip it around, and they're firing backwards as they're flying backwards, and you can do that in this game because it has a incredible range of motion with what you can do.
Right.
But I didn't figure that out until I really played with the advanced flight controls.
Yeah, you have to turn the in-game flight assist off to be able to do maneuvers like that.
But what the in-game flight assist does is it keeps you stable.
Right.
Whereas if I start to do a barrel roll without flight assist, I will continue to roll until I present an opposite force and control that roll. However, what that means is I hit lateral thrusters and tilt the nose up, and I will flip it ass over tea kettle while I'm flying, and now I am in full reverse.
Yep.
Until I hit afterburners and correct my course. So it's interesting with things like that, with the maneuvers you can do in the dogfighting. It took me a while to get used to the dogfighting. It took me a lot of practice
mm-hmm.
to feel comfortable with it. And now, even in my transporter, I feel okay with flipping a bitch in my transporter and firing on somebody who doesn't suspect it. And you get attacked, like, to me, like, Rusty has a different, and we'll kind of get into that in a minute. Like, me and him have taken different aspects of the game and the things that we like. Rusty likes jumping long distances. I prefer shorter distances most of the time because I like to see... I guess I like to always be engaging in something more or less directly. And I like a risk-reward. So I started off with trying to kill spaceships and blowing balls at it. And then I flipped over to smuggling because after I figured out that smuggling wasn't that hard, I started making a decent amount of money at it. So I'd get my not-so-great transport, fill it up with goods that were illegal in different places, and then sell them in those illegal places. And it could be anything from coffee to nicotine to slaves.
Right.
That part's a little weird. But it's...
The game is super deep in, you know, in different things. So, for instance, when I say trading, that's really just, like, naming a category. There's different types of economies for each star system, and each one of those economies has a strength and a weakness, and then there's governments for those economies that all are different. So there's anarchy, there's communism, there's dictatorships, there's all kinds of stuff. And that affects the people and the goods and everything that's in the star systems. And then there's an overarching thing that has what they call power play, which is influential people trying to take over specific systems and exploit their resources to power their war machines. And all of these things are just layered on top of each other in ways where when you get into the game, you're below the bottom rung. You're not even, you know, you're not even on the map as far as where you're supposed to be. The game does not tell you what to do.
It doesn't give you objectives.
It will start you off in one of the starting stations, and you go from there. If you haven't played the tutorial, you will probably crash trying to get out of the station, because everything is player controlled in as far as aspects of the game. So you start off in a station. Those stations are generally the bigger stations, which in this game are kind of barrel shaped. So inside, all the way around 360, there's docking bays. And then there's what I call a mail slot, which is basically the door out of the station. You have to fly up from your docking bay, align to the mail slot, and go out. And then when you get to a station, you have to fly through that mail spot.
All the stations rotate.
And they all rotate, so you have to rotate your ship at the same speed as the mail slot so you can get into it. And you have to rotate your ship so that your landing pad is underneath you, and you have to land your ship. And that takes some getting used to, especially with all the controls, because you're using pitch, yaw, you know, and
lateral
and thrusters and all kinds of stuff. You're controlling every aspect of the movement of your ship. So you have to land that ship flat on a target, basically, and you can't see the target physically, though you can look around the cockpit.
Well, and then you got an icon when you get close that shows you where your orientation is.
But you kind of have to guess to get to that point.
But just like driving a car, after you get used to where your nose is,
right,
you know how to park a ship. Some ships are harder to park than others. I have a freighter.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit harder to park until I figured it out. There's also, it's influenced by mass. And so
the heavier your ship is, the more sluggish it is.
Yes, and so to give you an example, like I have a fighter ship. That fighter ship, I can land on a postage stamp. Like I can hit afterburners, hit full stop, and in just a few meters park my ship. Transporter, on the other hand, I hit my afterburners, and I get it going at a pretty good clip. It takes a good 20 seconds to slow that bitch down until I have enough money to upgrade the thrusters on it. And you can see, like, from the cockpit, I can see my thruster shooting out fire, you know, trying to slow down. But I know that at this point, like, I got to start slowing that drift as I get a lot closer. Otherwise, I overshoot everything. Or I crash it. So, like, you know, crashing a couple of ships, I've gotten used to how all that stuff works and, you know, how to fly. And I think, to me, the most fun part is the manual flying. So, like, when, and there's different modes of transportation. There's your basic flying. There's your, what do they call it? What's the next one up?
So you've got normal flight, which is basically what you use to dock and
engage do fighters
stuff.
Or
right, dogfight, docking, stuff like that. Then you've got super cruise, which allows you to do intra-system faster than light speed. So you can go from planet to planet or visit stars and things like that inside one system. And then you have your frameshift hyperdrive, which will get you from star system to star system.
In a matter of about 10 seconds.
Right. And
but to mitigate that, they've engaged super cruise, really, so that you still have to fly once you get in a system.
Right. So you get, when you go into a system, and this really fucking, like, puckers your asshole the first few times you do it, you fly directly towards the fucking star, and you stop, like, a cunt hair away from that motherfucker, and you have to swing your ship away from the star, otherwise you will crash the fuck into the star, because you're still going at a basic, you know, your basic speed at, you know, sublight speed, basically, straight towards the star. So you can't play this game AFK.
There's no AFK, and there's some stuff that's happened to me while AFK.
Yes.
So you have insurance, and it's like, what, 1/20th of the cost of your ship?
It is. The insurance covers 95% of what your ship actually costs.
So if your ship blows up, you have to have that much, or you get your free basic ship.
Right. You have to pay 5% of what your ship and all of its modules cost to be able to get your ship back. If you don't have that, then you don't get your ship back, and you have to start back at the normal Sidewinder starting ship, which really sucks, because if you've put millions of credits into a ship and you can't rebuy it, all that's gone.
But on the flip side of all of this, you can... what was I going to say?
I don't know.
On the flip side of this, I mean, the making money in the game isn't terribly difficult once you start to get used to it.
Right. You take some side missions, you get get a few contracts, you can go to specific spots and find wanted people that have bounties on them so that you can...
It's even crazier than this. So, like, I have a couple of fighters that I use regularly, or fairly regularly, and you can go to a nav beacon. The nav beacon is the entry point for all ships to a star system, and so you will see people that pop in at that nav beacon before they kind of move on, and I can scan them to see if they have a bounty on them. And if they have a bounty on them, so let's say said player attacked a ship in free, in controlled space, or stole a bunch of stuff from somebody else, then I will make whatever his bounty is worth if I blow his ship up.
Yes.
So I sat around for a couple hours one day, and I just blew up assholes. And it was really, really, really fun to do. But you could be a pirate if you want to. I was watching a video of how to be a pirate, and a guy had a macro set up so that he would say, basically he was saying, if you'll dump your cargo for me, I won't blow your ship up.
And if they dump his their cargo, he just scoops that cargo up and goes to sell it.
Yeah. There were a few people that got really
snippy,
and then went ahead and attacked him. But he had a really
decent ship,
a really decent Cobra that he had souped up. So Cobra being like one of the elite fighters that you can get.
So you watched I watched the same video.
The guy had macro commands up because there are players, and I want to say it's like 30 plus people per area that it'll let it do. And I don't know how they do that, but I've gotten to a lot of areas that were really heavily populated. So. Some of the issues I've run into with playing with players is when I'm driving my freighter and I'm driving it to a remote station has one docking bay.
Three. Well, depends on the size.
They'll fit this size of ship.
Yeah.
And three smaller bays. Well, the larger bay can be shared by the smaller and larger ships. Basically, what happens is traffic happens.
and traffic jams happen.
And I get stuck at said station waiting on a parking spot. Which, instead of rage quitting, usually I just go solo mode and then flip back over to that, and then they're suddenly free, and it's just NPC players. But we're talking about risk-reward and things like that. Like, smuggling carries the cost of bounty hunters and law enforcement finding you and then interdicting you. And what interdicting you is you're driving at faster-than-light speed through a store system, somebody will see you, and then I don't know if you have a price in your head or not because I haven't been on this end of it, but they must just see Type 6 freighter and assume that I have goods. Or the popo's after me. And
what will happen on random, if you're neutral in a system and you're playing solo, what will happen is if you don't get a global message or a message directly to you from an NPC saying, you know, I see all of the cargo in your ship, I want it, or something like that, and you just get interdicted, a lot of times it is just the police pulling you over to make sure that you have the stuff in it. You know, you have the right stuff in your cargo bag. Sometimes you'll get pulled over, I'll say pulled over, interdicted, you're getting pulled out of fucking hyperspace by just random fuckers that want to, like, destroy your shit. But even the NPCs in this game will tell you, drop your cargo and I'll let you go. You know, and if you do drop your cargo, they will let you go. They'll just scoop up your cargo and leave. So, interdiction is interesting in such a way that I've seen both sides of it now.
Well, I've gotten good enough at it that unless it's just like a fully locked and loaded ship, like if I'm getting interdicted by a Viper, or I'm getting interdicted by a Sidewinder, or an Eagle, or something like that,
you can,
I'll flip the bitch, and then I was trying to take the Han Solo model, and I wanted to put good guns on this freighter. So it has basically, it's called a cannon, and it operates just like a cannon, but it has a tracking system on it. So in this case, it's called a gimbaled cannon, meaning that it's just got to be in a big-ass circle on the front of my screen, and I will hit it if it's within 1 kilometer of my ship, on top of a beam laser, and then I have really good really good power management on my ship. So something gets in my view like that, then what ends up happening is I melt their shields with my Class A beam laser, and it will go through a Sidewinder shield in one burst. It'll go through a Viper shield in about 3 bursts, and then I hit them with 2 or 3 cannon blasts, and they're done. So it's just, there have been times where I'm just like, fucking pull me over.
You can submit. You can, when you get interdicted, it'll have a little mini game that pops up. Your screen will show blue like somebody's trying to pull you out of, out of hyperspace. And you'll have a little target that says escape vector. If you follow that target with your, on your screen, and you are in that target more than they try to pull you out of it, then you will escape the interdiction, which will allow you to not always be pulled out of hyperspace. Well, sometimes, in Justin's case, I want to be interdicted. Fuckers, try it. You can throttle down to 0, and it'll say submitting to interdiction. You submit, and it'll pull you out of hyperspace, and they'll start attacking you. You can kill them. Or if, say, you're like me and totally traitor and have no weapons on your ship, you can submit, and the drive cooldown is way, way shorter. So you don't burn out your drive, and you can jump away faster.
So that's something else we should mention about the game. Is this, again, being very simic, being very fun, at least to me and Rusty for sure. But the ships are fully modular.
Yeah, I mean,
like, it's to a crazy degree. Like, he took a fighter and added a bunch of cargo bays to it.
Yes.
I have this freighter, and you have so many points, so, like, it has enough space for 2 weapons, so I want to put 2 badass weapons on it. But I got extra armor on the hull, I have better thrusters, carries a decent amount of cargo, it's got a really good, basically, hyperspace drive.
Yep.
Didn't put anything crazy on the sensors, you know, it just, like, there's all sorts of little things that you can change about it. That make a big difference. But there's, like, things like, you know, I could add a mining laser to it and a refinery, mm-hmm. and then a separate place to put said cargo. There's something called fuel scoops,
which
we'll talk about here in a second. But outfitting your ship is just like playing MechWarrior to me for some reason.
It is. It's very much like MechWarrior in
like
such a way
that... Like you got heat management, weight management, and...
Yep, you have to manage your heat, weight, your power level. You have to have the right reactor to be able to do...
It wasn't really hard to get that stuff, though, because there's a readout that basically says this will exceed the weight limit, this will exceed your power limit.
Right. I mean, you can pretty much set up your ship in just about any way that you want to. I know that one of the better endgame ships is set up to be basically a small cruiser. You know, it's got lots of weapon points and it can fuck shit up. But one of the best ways to use that is to put a couple weapons on it, but mostly you just throw a bunch of cargo space in there and use that as your trading vessel. And then you can use turreted guns, and the way that the ship is set up is kind of shaped like a wedge, so those turrets can hit just about anything.
Yeah, I've been wanting to see how turreted targeting works.
Turreted targeting, I think, is automatic targeting.
So what, do you just set a target and then just pull the trigger?
I don't even think you said... Well, I think you... Whenever somebody attacks you, you target the hostile, and the turreted laser just goes to work. I don't even think you have to fire it. I don't know. I've never used one, because I don't do combat in this game. Not yet, anyway. But...
I've seen
plenty of videos and read a couple people that set up a bigger mining ship, and they have turreted weapons on, you know, on the top and on the bottom of their ship. And whenever a NPC pirate comes in to fuck with them while they're mining, the turret, they just target it, and the turret will take care of them. They don't even have to turn; they can just continue mining. So,
but it's crazy on the amount of depth of what you can do. I mean, the three basic things that we've been doing is there's the cargo missions, there's cartography, and there's fighting. And Rusty has taken the cartography to an extreme degree and upgraded a ship to just go into no man's land. And there's like, there's populated space, which is a big chunk. And I say a big chunk.
It's
in the realm of this game, it's not. But in the realm of like how long it would take you to jump across all of it, I think honestly, just the hyper jumping would take you a considerable amount of time.
Well, depending on the ship, and it really does. All of this really depends on your ship and your loadout and how heavy your ship is and everything like that. But you can get from one edge of populated space to the other edge of populated space in maybe a half an hour's worth of time. What I'm talking about when he says, you know, I've taken exploring to an extreme, is zooming out on the star map all the way out so that you can see the entirety of the galaxy. And when you turn on the filter that shows populated space, it is barely a speck on this thing. The scale of this game is humongous. And there's 400 billion star systems that you can go to. Most of those places have never been seen by another player. So, what really draws me to this is that I can outfit my ship, and I'm really close to getting the exploring ship that I want, which basically has a full glass cockpit so I can look around and see everything. But what draws me to exploring is the fact that I can set up my ship, get a fuel scoop, which allows me to... you know, refuel from certain types of stars. You just fly close enough to the star to kind of scoop up fuel from it.
Without overheating.
And you have to manage the heat. But, you know, I will get a fuel scoop, and that will allow me to jump outside of populated space where there's no space stations. There's nobody out there, not even pirates. You go in a direction that you want to go, like pick a nebula or pick a interesting looking star. Some of them are purple, some of them are blue, some of them are fucking like bright white. There's black holes, there's pulsars, there's all kinds of stuff out there. And you just kind of pick a spot in the horizon, set your course, and just jump towards it. Eventually, once you get about 400 to 500 light years away from populated space, you start to see systems nobody's ever been in. And that's where things get really interesting, because you jump into a system, you don't know what to expect. Nobody's got any, you know, any idea of what kind of planets are in there. You don't have any idea other than the fact that it was a star in the sky and you went towards it. So you use a discovery scanner on your ship to scan the area around the star to see if there's any planets or anything like that. And then you can use a detailed surface scanner by going up to the planets and finding out what composes the planet. Like, is it a metal planet? Is it a rocky planet or an icy planet or something like that? Each one of those scans is worth credits in this game. So you go find these planets, explore them, scan the stars, scan the planets, and move on. If you're the first person to scan it when you get back to civilized space and sell that information, it will put your name next to each one of those things that you scanned. So your name is then permanently marked on the game, which is really fucking cool, because I go out just in the 2 days that I went out exploring. I probably hit maybe 70 different places that nobody's ever seen. And I think that is the coolest part about that. I mean, sure, 40 billion is a finite number, but it's a large finite number.
It's a finite number that nobody will ever see.
And it's, you still get money for actually scanning stuff that other people have scanned before. So you can still make money that way. But the coolest thing for me is that I'm going out, I'm seeing places nobody ever seen, and I can go all the way to the center of the galaxy. If you're interested in astronomy in any way, shape, or form, you can find things that to do. Like, if you wanted to, you could set up your ship, go to the Horsehead Nebula. It's in the game. You fly towards the nebula, and as you get closer to the nebula, it gets bigger in the background. Once you're right there next to the nebula, you see the entirety of the Horsehead Nebula in the, you know, in the horizon that you can see in your ship. It's reactive based off of where you are in the galaxy, so you can set your backdrop to it. One of the things that I will probably do a little bit later, because everybody else has done it, is fly towards the center of the galaxy. And in, you know, in the area where you start, the stars are kind of spread out. They're about 15 or so light years away from each other, and, you know, you go do what you're going to do. At the center of the galaxy,
to a point where you couldn't jump far enough to get to the next star?
Yeah, I mean, if you go farther out, like if you go farther away from the center of the galaxy, things start to get wider apart, so you have to have a ship with a really long jump range to be able to get to from star to star.
So it won't let you go to sublight for a minute to...
No. You have to jump from star to star to be able to get there. So there's some places like the Cat's Eye Nebula. It used to be a supernova that I was looking for but couldn't find. They just... The way that it's set up is that the Cat's Eye Nebula is a star that is just outside the range of being able to jump to it. So there might be something in the future for that, but that's just one of those things in the sky you can't see. The stars at the center of the galaxy are so close together. Like, if you zoom in to view the stars on the star map, there's hundreds of stars that load into your screen every time you just take one tick towards the center of the galaxy. They're so packed together that you could almost fly from star to star without jumping. That, just the ball of fucking everything in there is really, really interesting. I would love to see what the fucking, you know, the what the background looks like with all of those stars just packed together like that. That would be fucking fantastic looking. But Sagittarius A is the supermassive black hole
at the center of the galaxy, it's in the game. You can go to it. It is freaking ginormous. So
one of the comments that I have about this, like we're saying, like the game is not for everybody, but like if you're into this kind of stuff at all, if you're ever like a Wing Commander fan or somebody who does generally like exploring stuff like this and seeing what their take is on it, it's something that's just so, like, there hasn't been a game that's been this massive yet. Like, we know No Man's Sky is going to pre-generate stuff.
Right. Well, No Man's Sky was supposed to be a universe-wide with what, you know, because it's procedurally generated, it's essentially an infinite universe. So you can do something similar, explore new worlds, and be able to actually land on them. That's one of the things that has No Man's Sky a step above what Elite Dangerous is.
Yeah,
because you really can't leave your ship in Elite Dangerous. You
never leave the ship. It's just, you're just flying world to world. You're like I said, you're fighting, you're trading, or you're exploring. And I haven't gotten to the other metagame stuff yet, but that's actually something I plan on doing tonight. The more that we're talking about it, I was like, I'm going to align with the power and see if I get quests or something.
One of the things that you do with the power, you have to, if you're going into power ploy, you pick a side to align to, and there's like eight of the, you know, eight different factions that you can choose. Depending on who you pick, you will immediately become an enemy to any of the opposing factions for that person. So some star systems that are controlled by that, you know, that other opposing faction, you'll come up as a wanted criminal, and you can be hunted down. The things that you end up doing is once you align to a faction, you go to the faction's headquarters, and on the bulletin board, you'll have faction quests that you can do. So you can pick up supplies from the capital, basically, and take it to a system that needs it, and it'll fortify that system against being taken over by another faction. What you get is you'll end up getting merits, which will allow you to pick up specific types of ships and modules, and you'll also get some credits for it. The thing about Elite Dangerous is right now the bones of this game is amazing. The fucking game looks phenomenal. It runs really well on my machine, on your machine. It looks fantastic. There isn't necessarily an end game. It's basically a sandbox that you can play around in and find your own way. So if you're looking for a game that directs you to do stuff, this is not a game for you.
No, this is definitely not that game.
But if you are looking for a game that allows you to have the freedom to be able to go do whatever the fuck you want to do, pretty much, you can do that. I would say that this is a bit more balanced in certain regards than Eve. It gives you a solo option, which Eve didn't. And the solo options, it draws me in because I'm not a PvP ship person. I don't necessarily really want to fuck with people that want to
ruin my big thing with it is just trying to find a little bit of extra challenge. And honestly, it's more the NPCs that fuck with me than actual people. I've actually only been engaged by one person while I was at a star station that decided he wanted to mess with my day. And so I took my beast of a ship and then flipped it on its side and basically laid on top of a landing platform while he tried to shoot me until the station reacted and blew him out of the sky.
That was just an idiot.
Yeah, I was like, he typed at me, he's like, you have great cargo. May I have it? I said, hell no, I'm about to sell it. And then he said, prepare to die or something like that. And I was like, you're screwed. I just hit boosters and laid it on its side next to the station. He was hitting me and the station. And I flew like a loop-de-loop around it, flipped it around, and wasn't going to engage because I was going to try to be the better man. I didn't know what would happen if I engaged him there. So I just let the station blow him out of the sky, and then I sold my ship.
Well, if you get attacked, you can defend yourself without getting a bounty, I think. If...
you instigate the attack. Like, if you interdict somebody, you get a bounty. It's really tiny. It's like 220 credits or something like that for an interdiction.
Well, a lot of people do the interdiction so they can scan cargo or scan wanted status.
I mean, the game's got so much going for it that it's one of the few games that kind of popped out and really made me, like, think about the game the entire day. Like, I go to work, I'm thinking about what I'm going to end up doing when I get home and spend time just doing that. And that, you know, I look up all of the different, you know, videos and, you know, stuff. There's third-party websites that help with trading and outfitting your ship and stuff like that so that you can kind of, like, theorycraft the best ship setup for what you want to do. It reminded me a lot about a lot of the, you know, previous games just kind of rolled into one, and that's what draws me to it, is the fact that for me, I don't necessarily look for interaction. I look for the fucking pretty sights that I can see. I like flying into a system and have that oh shit moment where you're flying into a binary system and you fly right in between two fucking stars. And you're like, oh my god, I need to get the fuck out of here. I am 300 fucking thousand light years away from everything else. I can't really buy my ship again. So, you know.
I don't like some of that. I tried the exploring like Rusty was doing, but I missed the human interaction. And in my mind, I think I'd rather be a bounty hunter / smuggler, and I know that doesn't really mix, but I like the risk reward of smuggling because it's a quick payoff. It's not that, honestly, it's not that risky except for in certain systems where they scan you all over the fucking place, and I've learned that a couple times.
Find the systems that have medium to low security. If you can smuggle out of a system that that has low security, you don't get scanned very often. So just, you know, when you go to the galaxy map and you look at different star systems, you'll see their population and their security level. The problem is that when you're a low security system, there'll be more NPC pirates. So,
well, and like I said, I've been able to escape all but one interdiction, and then the ones that I have been interdicted have been more or less intentional, just to see what's going on.
I can escape most of them, and even in the Type 6 transport ship that I have, I'm fast enough to escape.
Yeah, and I think part of it's the control scheme, especially if it's a player who hasn't messed with it enough.
Right.
I mean, and it goes really, there's a lot of control, and you could do a lot of stuff with the flying. I'd like to get even better with the flying, but.
Well, to give you an idea of how difficult the learning curve is, it took about 3 hours of really trying to, like, understand the controls to be able to function fairly well. I mean, that was just the basics to be able to get from point A to point B without crashing your ship.
Well, but like I said, like we've been saying, like once you get it, you start to feel like a badass.
Yeah.
Because you can make the ship do kind of whatever you want it to do.
Right.
So
one of the really cool things that I saw for this is that it allows for a third-party voice controlled system. It's built by, you know, a player. It was probably built for other games as well, but it works really well for Elite Dangerous. So if you have a microphone on, you can say lower landing gear, and it will lower the landing gear on your ship. You can say flight assist off, and it'll turn the flight assist off for you. And there's voice packs that you can add into it that will talk back to you in the ship voice. So it'll give you kind of an immersive feel.
It's also compatible with Oculus Rift.
It's really compatible with Oculus Rift. Now, the thing about this is that for you to fly, you're basically facing forward. You have your heads-up display and everything like that. But for you to be able to go from system to system or check your internal systems on your ship, you have to look left or look right. And there's different panels on the left and right. Now, on the Xbox controller, you can manually look using one of the sticks. But with the Oculus Rift, you don't have to do that. You just look left or look right,
Or if you're dogfighting and the fucking, you know, the dude does a flip above you, you can look up and see their ship above you, and you can kind of, like, direct your ship that way. It gives you a full, I'd say, 180-degree view of your ship, really, because you go from a full left and right, top to, you know, you can see your lap. Yeah,
there's no rear view mirror, but...
Yeah, you can see your lap, you can see the, you know, the player person, you know, like the chest and the lap and everything like that, and you can see the top of the canopy and stuff. I was saying that if I had a flight stick with a throttle control, foot pedals for being able to deal with, you know, the rolls and, you know, speeds and whatnot, and then have an Oculus Rift with the headset thing, sit down in a fucking chair and just play Elite Dangerous with all of those things together, it would be an absolutely immersive experience. I would just... I'd poop sock. I think I wouldn't want to fucking get up to go to the bathroom, because that would mean going back to reality. It looks fantastic. So that was one of the games that I really was really looking forward to pick it up and didn't want to spend the full price on it.
Well, because we didn't know if it was going to be good or not.
Right. But it was a surprise. I actually liked the fucking game. And I'm planning on playing it tonight. I'm this fucking close to being able to buy the new exploring ship so that I can go. And I plan, this is how crazy this is. I plan, once I get my ship all set up the way that I want it, to leave space that has population and go for a week or two. Week or two of playtime in the middle of unexplored space and just explore. If I can find, you know, Earth-like planets or something like that, I can bring that back and make tons of money. Probably not as much as trading, but still, it's, you know, it's fun for me to do that. I won't have to deal with interdictions, I won't have to deal with police, I won't have to deal with anything but me, my ship, and the stars. And that is beautiful to me. So, and that is definitely not for everybody, because that sounds like a boring experience, but I set up Spotify, you know, and, you know, listen to music while doing so. It's kind of like I've got my own little fucking tape deck and my, you know, and got my awesome mix number two in the fucking thing and go, I'm all over this game, dude.
Well, so that you can get to that game faster, I think we ought to wrap up with Elite Dangerous, and it's safe to say that me and Rusty like you pretty well.
We've been talking about it for about a half an hour, so yeah, I'd say so.
I say with that.
Jason likes it, he just can't buy it. And I'm sure it runs on your system, though.
And y'all sitting here talking about it is like...
making you want to fucking buy it. He's sitting there looking at the Steam price right now, probably.
It's making me have to do other things on my computer to keep from thinking about it.
Well, to tell you what my setup is right now, I've got my laptop to my left, I got my keyboard to do the various things that I need to do, like type in system names and stuff. And my mouse is to my right, I'm in my comfy Xbox chair. And I have this game set up on my 50-inch fucking TV, and it looks fantastic. And I just love it. It's super, super awesome. So, enough Elite Dangerous, because I really want to fucking play that game right now. I am so jonesing.
So, like I was saying, with this episode, it is summertime, and there's not a whole lot of news. There is one really big news piece that is actually pretty sad. Iwata from Nintendo died, and most people, by the time they heard this episode, they know that.
Yeah.
It was a pretty big news story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that old. It was late 50s?
Late 50s, yeah.
Yeah.
That's not that I know him personally or anything like that, but he was a real big figure in the gaming industry, and especially with the Japanese market, like, they are just so invested with what they do. I still feel like that a lot of the side... A lot of the things that I respect about Nintendo is Nintendo does whatever the fuck it wants. It doesn't usually follow the AAA market. It
They put stuff out on a system that has its own specs to do what they want it to do, to play the types of games that they want it to play, and they are still very video gamey in a lot of good ways. Well, and so I think it's just sad in general because it's kind of the end of an, I don't know that it's an end of an era, but you know, I'm sure they've got something in place to kind of transition from that. But I mean, he was one of the people that programmed a lot of games.
Right. Well, I mean, he was special in such a way that he was, you know, he was not only the head of, you know, of everything there at Nintendo, but also he got down into the programmer pit and started programming with the programmers of games. And his hands had been on, you know, on games like Super Mario Brothers, and he had his.
Yeah, I think he did some stuff with Pokemon.
And Pokemon and Super Smash Brothers and things like that. He was into these games on a personal level, and he spent a lot of time working with programmers to make games fun, and that was, you know, that was the biggest thing that he had, you know, contributed to the company, is the fact that he made it his goal to make sure that games were fun to play, you know. And you know, it's a massive loss to see him go, and you know, it's when I heard the news, it struck me kind of, you know, sideways, because I was like, I mean, this is a guy that basically, you know, his games were my childhood. You know, the games that he had hands in
were... Really, everybody that's in their 30s probably played a shitload of Nintendo.
Right, and...
They gamed it all.
Yeah, and just, you know, to think that he's gone is just... It's.
I think the word Nintendo is probably synonymous with video games in a lot of our parents' head.
Well, yeah, I mean, even when I was playing my Sega Genesis or any other game, it was, get off your Nintendo. You know, that's... I mean, that right there is just tells you how deep ingrained his work was actually in most people's lives, even those people that he didn't directly touch to his games.
And let's face it, if it wasn't for him and those first few people he worked with, console gaming would have died.
Yeah, I mean, there was...
I mean, it was on its way out until... The Nintendo Entertainment System came around.
NES. Oh my god!
Because Atari just stopped putting any kind of seal of quality on any of their stuff, and it just
started
crap games.
Yep. So, Nintendo saved the console market. Nintendo actually made gaming the way it is right now, in a lot of respects.
You know, and he helped make a lot of those early. Publishers and developers that are still around today. You know, Rare. EA. Activision.
Even though Rare doesn't have that much, that good of a,
you know,
relationship with Nintendo anymore.
Right. Konami wasn't Konami until Nintendo. I mean, they were around, but...
Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Right. No, it's just crazy to, you know, to think that there's a world without the, you know, the kind of fun that he injected into it. So he's got a hell of a legacy, and you know, there was thousands and thousands of people that actually showed up for his funeral to pay respects, and so many people that, you know, that weren't able to go that still paid their respects in their own way. kind of like what we're doing right now, just remembering him.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Didn't have a personal relationship with him, but it's one of those things where he's an iconic figure in the games industry that made a big impact on it as to keeping it relevant. You know?
Yep.
Making it a thing that people want to continue to invest in so that it's something that continues to sell, so that I continue to have one of my favorite hobbies. Mm-hmm. Not just me, but a lot of people.
Yeah, it's... Just crazy when you see that type of stuff, you know, come through the news feed. But, you know, I don't know. That's kind of depressing, really, right now. I'm starting to fall onto that. But we do have a few other things. I mean, I was able to pull up a few other things.
Anything relevant?
Well, that
will keep you... Think about this. How important is it to the point of, will it hold you from playing Elite Dangerous?
Well, this is kind of important.
Impress me.
All right, fine. I mean, you want to see this? In the PC industry, you're looking at a pretty big release here very soon, probably in the next couple weeks, with Windows 10. Windows 10, they've always, you know, they had said from the start that they were going to do a lot of integration for Windows 10 and video games, because they realized that there's a lot of gamers out there that also use PCs and stuff. So what the big thing is that they're going to be able to allow Xbox One owners to stream games to Windows 10 devices, so that, you know, that will allow you to be able to basically play your Xbox on a tablet and be able to do things. It's streamed over local networks, not over the internet. So it allows you to be able to, you know, play games in different spots in your home where you don't have a TV, but you may have a computer or tablet set up. And that will help in quite a few different, you know, scenarios. Say Jason wants to fucking play Destiny with us, and, you know, his wife is watching TV. You know, he can play Destiny on, you know, on a Windows 10 device while she watches TV. Until she gets off the TV, then he gets his big TV back. But he'll still be able to play.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. I thought that it was going to be, you know, being able to stream my Xbox One over the internet, but that's okay. I don't necessarily need to play my Xbox One at work.
I do.
Well, yeah.
No, I don't.
It'd be kind of nice.
I don't have enough time.
Well, I do, and that's the sad part. But that's
I think that's a big deal, and I think it's a game changer to see how that ends up working out and how well it works. I mean, I could see, maybe not in my case, but just like what you were saying, if, let's just say I got a laptop back in my bedroom, or I have a kid that wants to play the Xbox, but I want to watch a movie or TV or sports or whatever, then he can just stream the Xbox back to his laptop and plug in his controller and go.
Yeah, it's... gives you basically, you know, access to your full Xbox, being able to set up parties and things like that using the Xbox app for Windows 10. So you can create an Xbox Live profile if you don't already have one. It looks really good. And the integration for being able to pull Xbox into the new Windows is pretty big. It's actually kind of huge in the gaming industry, because there hasn't been an operating system that has integration like that. And Xbox or Microsoft is in a unique spot to be able to do that. So it'd be interesting to see how well it works. but Windows 10 is set to release on July 29th, so 10 days from now.
It could be a point of laziness for me, so I don't have to flip inputs between the computer and the Xbox.
Maybe. I think that it would probably be a little bit snappier if you're getting the video input directly from the Xbox. But I'm looking forward to Windows 10 a lot, because not just because of the features for being able to integrate Xbox One, but also being able to, you know, have an operating system that has some more advanced features for the better games out there and the better video cards that you can get for the new DirectX and things like that. It looks fantastic, so really looking forward to that. Not a whole lot of anything else. Gauntlet did get a little bit of an update. Remember playing Gauntlet?
Yeah, I do.
We remember playing Gauntlet for Gauntlet.
It was fun for about 4 hours.
And that's pretty much all it was. They offer they offer a new mode and a few more choices for Gauntlet. So you can play that over again, and it'll probably be an extra 2 hours of content, I want to say, but hey, whatever. I mean, it was a decent game, but I don't think it's game changing. Not like Elite Dangerous is. Oh my god, I want to play that game.
Well, I was going to say, with it being July, there's not really any. I didn't see any prominent releases for anything that I thought was crazy.
The only other stuff that I have, I've got a lot of like Destiny related news, but I mean, it's all summed up in the fact that when The Taken King comes out in September, just about everything you know about Destiny is going to be touched in some way, shape, or form. All the weapons are being retuned, the quest system's being changed, the bounties are being changed to a point where you can actually access them from orbit and be able to turn them in from orbit. They're promising more story. I'm waiting to see if that's the case, but they're promising it to be a little bit more story-oriented. It looks like this, you know, Destiny 1.5, as I'm calling it, the Taken King, looks to be pretty good. So, if you have played Destiny and set it down for a little bit, the current expansion's kind of neat, but the average player is going to get about, 6 hours, 7 hours if you're just playing content.
Yeah.
The new expansion looks to be a bit more.
Prison of Elders is awesome.
Except for Skolas. Fuck Skolas. Except for
Skolas.
Fuck Skolas in his face.
We have not tried the Trials.
The reason why we haven't tried Trials of Osiris, it's all PvP. And right now, if you don't have, if you don't have Thorn, and you don't have a shotgun called Fellwinter's Lie, and you don't have the right perks on Phil Winter's Lie, and you don't have a machine gun that's high impact, slow fire rate, you basically don't go anywhere in Trials, and it's just a pain in the ass. Plus, the map that it's on is pretty fucking terrible. So.
With that, I already checked game releases. There's nothing coming out of note.
Nope.
Except for old releases being released on console. Old releases to us PC gamers, they've been out for months or in some cases a year. The huge-ass update to Terraria, you should play it again. And Starbound is nearly out. Wasteland 2 will be released sometime very soon on console. But
and that's worth picking up.
And it's super worth picking up. That being said,
there's the 7 Days to Die out new beta. We haven't even touched that yet.
We don't have time to share it.
No, but, I mean...
Yeah, I know.
It's out, so if you play 7 Days to Die, check it out.
Yeah, if we wanted to talk about that, I got about 30 minutes worth of updates I could talk about.
Oh, no, we don't need to go over that. We'll do that later. Have we done we didn't do a video for 7 Days, did we?
I want to wait till it's more or less out.
Oh, you want to wait till it's actually in release form?
It changes so much. I'll talk a little bit about it when we go on break.
Okay. This.
That being said, you can find us at tiltcast.com on Twitter and Stitcher /tiltcast. Stitcher, search Tiltcast. iTunes, search Tiltcast. Go to twitch.tv/TheRealTiltcast. YouTube.com/TheRealTiltcast. And obviously search us on Facebook. So where we post the episodes as well as on Twitter. That being said, find friends of the show. We got bmfcast.com. We've got noquarters.net. We have For the Love of Gaming.
For the Love of Gaming.
And tvgp.tv. They do great things, and they helped us start this show.
Yeah. So,
that being said, you folks have a good day or night or whatever the fuck you're doing, and then we'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right.
Later.
Peace.